comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted to be here, and I hope you are too. I think you will be. We're here because you have a right to know. We're here because you matter. That's not just a cliche here. I know I say it every night. That's because it's true every night. You do have a right to know, and you do matter. And I appreciate you being here. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I do appreciate it. For those of you who are brand new to the Kevin Smith Show, you don't know that we have something called the K-Files. Well, the K-Files is our free weekly newsletter. And let me emphasize the word free. It is free. And it's not Washington, D.C. free. You know, that's where they give you something, but there's all these strings attached. It doesn't work that way. When we say free, we're just speaking English, and it means free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. It's a good newsletter. We've been publishing that, I started that in 2000, so actually just over 11 years we've been publishing that. And we have people who are still receiving the K-Files today who subscribed back then. So it must be pretty good. And I invite you to go over to my website, scroll down, and you'll see where it says K-Files. Just click that and subscribe, all right? Let me invite you also to become a member here at the Kevin Smith Show. We're listener-supported. Without your support, without you standing with us, we can't stand. It's 100% listener supported. And so we invite you to become a member. But, you know, when you become a member, you're in essence, you're giving us a gift of $7.50 a month, and we're giving you a gift back that's worth probably hundreds of dollars a month in value. That is because of all of the great stuff you get in the members community. So check that out. And if you're not a member, you can fix that tonight. Just click where it says join. When you scroll down to subscribe to the K-Files, you're also going to see a gigantic link that says Alternative Universe iConference, right? Well, the next Alternative Universe iConference will take place on April the 21st, and the tickets are on sale right now. So I invite you to click that link, and you'll see who's speaking and what they're going to be speaking about. You're going to get five great presentations. It's live. It's not pre-recorded. It's live. And unlike other conferences, you know, you have to buy a plane ticket and go to the conference. Well, the conference is coming to you. That's the way the iConference works. And it's only $10. $10 for the conference. You can't beat it. In fact, you can't match it. You won't find anything anywhere near this. So click the link that says Alternative Universe and get your ticket today. All right? We're going to step away for a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with James Horak. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is going to be a little bit different tonight. It's still the Kevin Smith Show, and we're still going to be talking about the world of the strange and the unexplained. This is just a little bit different in the way we're approaching it, and here is why, and here is how it is a little bit different. The reason it's a little bit different is, as you noticed last night, boy, I'll tell you, this early springtime, and you know, I mean, it's just killing my sinuses, and I just got over a cold from hell, sort of, and then this started. Well, the guest we had scheduled for tonight called and said that he was suffering the same thing, and begged me to forgive him, which was not necessary, and said he just couldn't do the show tonight. So I approached the day from the standpoint that I was going to be flying solo tonight, and the further the day went, the more I had problems with this, with the allergies, and I just got so tired of all the coughing and hacking and trying to figure out, now how can I control that without taking tons of medicine, because you know I just don't do that. And I did take a decongestant, and you know, since I don't take medicine, I mean, it's just rare for me to take medicine. It just made me feel strange. You know, just not myself. So I had a brilliant idea. The brilliant idea is I called James Horak and begged him to rescue me here tonight, which he has so graciously agreed to do. I asked him to come on the show with me tonight and talk with me about some stuff that, you know, I've got some questions about. And but what we're going to do, we're going to do that, but we're going to open up the telephones early. And so you're going to get more time this evening. I know every time we have James on the show, people want to call and talk to him and have questions for him. And we run out of time. So what we're going to do, we've got a couple of things we want to talk about just a little bit. And then we're going to open up the telephone lines. We'll continue talking about these strange things, but we're going to open the telephone lines early and give you more opportunity to talk to James Horak. You have more access time to James Horak, and I hope tonight you will use that access time. It's a rare opportunity, and it's a great opportunity. James, welcome to the show.
Kevin, I hope you start feeling better.
Well, I hope I start feeling better too, James. I don't feel bad, and the effects of the decongestant that has begun to wear off, and I'm not as fuzzy-minded as I was. So I'm feeling good. I actually am. It's just that every once in a while, I have to hit the kill switch over here and cough and hack and deal with allergies. So I appreciate you for being here this evening. You're sort of the co-host this evening. You haven't done that before with me, have you?
Oh, I've never done it. but I'll try to be gracious, but I don't know that I can live up to you.
Listen, if living up to me is your goal in life, you need to set your sights a little bit higher, James.
I doubt it.
Folks, back in February, reports started showing up out there on the internet, and I started getting emails about it. Those of you who have sent me these suggestions related to this, and I haven't done anything with it, you thought. Well, I was doing something with it. I was trying to check into it, and tonight we'll talk about it. But back in February, I started getting these emails suggesting that I take a look at first one site and then another, where there were articles about some strange boxes that were showing up on the beaches up in our Pacific Northwest, particularly Oregon, I believe. And the first article that I saw, I believe, said that, you know, February the 8th is when this began. Now, it could, maybe something is on the internet where it's earlier than that, and I'm just not aware of it. But February the 8th is the earliest one that I'm aware of. And these boxes, nobody knows, or at least the articles say, nobody really knows what they are, and they are difficult, if not impossible, to move. You can't move them, can't drag them or pick them up with a front-end loader or anything like that. At least that's some of the reports. Some of the reports, James, say that they emit a strange humming sound. I don't know. Have you seen any of those reports that talk about that?
Yes, I have. What's curious about all of this is that I have yet to see a picture or to see a pattern of where they're distributed. It's almost as if the significance of these stories is what they leave out, far more than what they leave in. And it's just human nature that the minute you go out, let's say a couple go out and they find one of these on the shore, oh, honey, go over there and stand by that and let me take your picture with it. None of that. There's nobody standing by one to give us an idea of dimension. There's no exact dimension given in any of these reports I've seen. So I'm suspicious about them until I see more.
Well, I'm suspicious of a debunking story that I found, and I'm going to share that tonight. It might be true. The problem is that the debunking side, you know, they, one of the things, James, that debunkers say about UFOs and paranormal and strange phenomena is that there's so many hoaxes. Yeah, but there's just as many hoaxes and lies from the debunkers.
That's right, and I hate to be thrown into the same camp with the debunkers, but this may be one of those rare occasions where we end up there. And usually when something like this happens, the debunkers are quiet, or they are noncommittal. But if they've got something to say that's valid about debunking this, I might be on their side. I don't know. I can't imagine what these are. I have no clue. And I would very much be interested in more details.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, I'm looking for what is the truth. And if we have a story that these were dropped off by UFOs and that turns out the data shows that's not the case, then that's not the case, and that's fine with me. I don't consider that debunking. I consider that pro-truthing. But, you know, and if somebody says that these were dropped off by UFOs and the data shows that is the truth, then that is the truth. Whatever the truth is, that's okay. That's good. That's cool. You know, I'm not interested in making it into something it's not. And I'm not interested in pretending it's not what it is. I just want to know what it is. But the reports say that that a bunch of these were strung out on beaches all up the northwest coast of the United States of America. And they appeared suddenly, and some people said they emitted a hum. I read a report today that said that all of a sudden it sounded like the sustained pitch of an emergency siren, and you know that it woke people up in the nighttime, and you know they. Nobody knew what it was, but it was coming from one of these boxes. Which, by the way, if it's a hoax, someone had a good laugh at having rigged a siren up in a box and woke a bunch of people up. But anyway, there are just strange reports about it. And I've read several theories that these are to stabilize the fault line out there, and that it's a ET operation to try and stabilize the fault line and prevent a major earthquake. And, well, okay, I mean, like I say, wherever the data goes, that's where I think we ought to go. Where the, you know, but James, at this point, I've seen theories, I've seen reports, I've seen stories. I haven't seen any data. Like you, I wonder about these pictures. Well, let's just put a picture up on our TV channel. There are two pictures here, and the one on the left is the one that James, you and I have both seen in the articles about these boxes. It's just a box laying on the beach, and way out on the horizon you can see a guy walking, and his dog is out there walking with him. But there's no one up close to the box so that you can see any relative size. But that's the one that appears with the original report that I read in Hulik.com. Next to it is a picture on the right of a box on the beach. It looks very similar. And this appeared in the South Lincoln County News. And it was identified as being a pier float constructed of wood covered in fiberglass. And
which you could move.
Which you can move. And the article that went with that theorized that perhaps these broke loose during the storms in January, got washed out to sea in the storms, and now are returning, floating back up on the beaches. So that's the story. And frankly, that sounds reasonable. Except, you can move it. You can pick them up and move them. And the reports that we have of these other boxes say they cannot be moved. And in the Hulik article, they actually, quote a scientist there who, let me see if I can bring that up. And let's see, there we go. Let me see if I can come up with his name very quickly here. This scientist, Dr. Hanschumacher, he's got some sort of an official position there. Works for the OSU Research Enterprise at the nearby Hatfield Marine Science Center in Newport, Oregon. That's Dr. Hanschumacher. He talks about these. He doesn't speculate about their origins. He says, you know, we don't know what they are yet. It's just something. It's strange, and we have to check into it. But Dr. Hanschumacher would not speculate about various rumors regarding the boxes, but said that an alert has gone out and the boxes are being investigated. Okay, then we get that story about them being pier floats. So here's the problem I have, James. You pointed out something very, very important. And that is that it's the data that's not being provided with these reports that draws your attention. Well, that's exactly like me. I mean, that's where there's a hole in the information, that's where I focus, because that's where the truth is hiding. So here's the problem. We have the South Lincoln County News now saying they've been identified, they are pier floats. But we have Dr. Hans Schumacher from Oregon State University, who said an alert has gone out and they have been, they are being investigated. Now, I think Dr. Hans Schumacher would know a peer float when he sees one.
Of course, and not to belabor a point, but I mean, in the age when people can get such tremendous shots of UFOs that are moving and doing fantastic things in the sky, we can't get somebody to get out there with a camera, have their girlfriend stand up beside it, you know, after you convince her it won't eat her, mm-hmm. and take a picture so we can all see, hey, that is big. And then maybe they said they tried to move it with a front loader or bulldozer. It'd be nice to have a picture of them trying to do that, wouldn't it? And you would mm-hmm. think in today's world where so many people are carrying around a cell phone that has those capabilities that someone would say, yeah, I'm going to make a record of this thing.
Well, somebody took a picture of that box laying on the beach that I showed.
Yeah, so but they really they, didn't.
Why couldn't they put somebody over next to it?
I wouldn't give them an A for directory.
No. No, so see, folks, the point is on both sides of this, there appears to be missing data here. There appears to be, and I'm not saying that there's a conspiracy here. There could be, but I'm not saying that that's the case. What I am saying is that there's chunks of information missing that you would normally expect to see there on both sides of the issue. Okay.
And that we even get with a UFO.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So here you've got Dr. Hans Schumacher. And Doctor, if I'm mispronouncing your name, please forgive me. I'm doing the best I can with my Texas accent. Dr. Hans Schumacher. And he is, let's see, he's with the OSU, that's Oregon State University, Hatfield Marine Science Center. Okay, so he knows about things that are in the ocean. He knows about things that come up on the beach. It just makes sense to me that Dr. Hans Schumacher would know a pier float. I know a pier float, and I don't live near the ocean. I know what a pier float looks like. And I think most fishermen, regardless of where they live, have been on a pier somewhere, and they have seen pier floats. You know what they are. So I would think Dr. Hans Schumacher would know a pier float. And I can't imagine that he would say an alert has gone out for pier floats. We have to take a break. And when we come back from this break, we'll continue talking. Indeed, listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and this is the Kevin Smith, and on the telephone with me, actually not the telephone, but on Skype with me, is the James Horak. James, the point I was making as we went to break, I don't want to belabor the point, but I do want to pick up there, and that is, I cannot imagine that Dr. Hans Schumacher of OSU Hatfield Marine Research Center would not know a pier float. And he said an alert has gone out and the boxes are being investigated. I don't understand why there would be an alert over pier floats.
Now, obviously, there's more to it in whatever these things are. I would like some details, and I don't understand why we don't have them from the people that saw them or found them at first.
Yes, they are principally at fault for the lack of detail here.
Yeah, yeah, it makes it odd. I would certainly like to know more about them, and I would like to see a pattern of their distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the impression from something that I'd read last week that they had been found elsewhere in the world.
That's true. I read that too. And as a matter of fact, where was it? Sri Lanka. In Sri Lanka, these boxes appeared on the beaches there before the big earthquake. You know, the earthquake that caused the big tsunami. It was an earthquake at the bottom of the Indian Ocean, created the big tsunami that wiped out 250,000 people. And these boxes appeared on the beaches in Sri Lanka shortly before that happened.
It's too bad no one was carrying around a cell phone there either.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm gonna get on the other side of the fence now for a moment and defend the people that didn't take pictures like we thought they should. You're out walking along on a beach and you see a box. It's just a box. You know, you go over and you try to move it. It's too heavy. You can't pick it up. Can't move it. Okay. But it's just a box, and we see boxes all the time. Whereas if it were flying in the air, that would be strange. But just a box abandoned on the beach,
Well, these are supposed to be pretty big from my impression.
Well, maybe. Because we haven't seen pictures where we can compare sizes with something else, I don't know how big they are. But yeah. Maybe they are big. But, I mean, you see what I'm saying. If you were walking along, you see a box, you wouldn't think it was all that strange. But a UFO, you would, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I want to move over to Lord Pakal in Palenque. I think you saw the show that I did where I talked about Lord Pakal, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. That's a highly interesting tune. And I was noticing some things that were anomalous about the face. They're very, very magnificent specimen, I'll say that. And that goes along with the legends of the early pre-Mayan dynasty that was supposed to have unified the tribal organizations of the early Mayan.
He's credited with the founding of the Mayan Empire. And, you know, I got some email after the show. I get email after each show. But I got some email after the show where there were people that were saying, you know, great show, but, you know, there were Mayan kings before him. Well, yeah, I know. Every Mayan city had its own king. And Lord Pakal's father was one of them. So obviously there were Mayan kings before him. But he's the one that unified the Mayan tribal areas and city-states into an empire where they had one king supreme over them all, and that was him.
That's right. The differences that this makes is basically the building of roads that go through the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And that
and the tunnel system. And the tunnel system.
And they built, they had reservoirs for fish. They had a number of things that they didn't have before. Mm-hmm. The Olmec had, and then the Olmec disappears thousands of years prior to this. And then you have tribal structures within the early period Mayan cultures, all the way down to Central America. But as this empire building gets started, then you start having the developments. They had granaries. They had rest stops on their trails. They had some paved roads. Some people conjecture that they had the use of the wheel, and there's no reason to believe they didn't. There were Indians in North America on the East Coast that used the wheel to grind corn.
Mm-hmm.
So you see things throughout North America, South America, and Central America, and Mexico that don't conform to archaeology's construction of history and chronology that are not shared. You know, these people don't come up and tell you, well, we have a kink in our chain right here. They never say that, but if you talk to people that have been in the field, seen some of the excavations to any extent, they'll tell you that there are a number of things that just don't conform to the archaeological record. And the same is true to the geological record. And when linguists try to determine the movement of people by studying the variations in the language and the similarities,
mm-hmm.
oh man, they start pulling their hair out. There are things that just do not conform to contiguous time in the record in any way.
Well, one thing also that does not conform and that also got my attention was that whenever the sarcophagus of Pakal was opened, we have pictures. You can go on the internet, you can find these pictures of the sarcophagus before it was opened. You can find pictures of the sarcophagus with the lid off so you can see inside, and it's empty. And but if you start looking, you know, all the accounts say that they found his skeletal remains. They found his skeleton in the sarcophagus. But start looking for the skeleton of Lord Pakal, and I'll tell you what. I combed the internet looking for it, and I could not find it. But
well,
then I did.
It's somewhere now. If they tell you that it particulates due to the bacteria in the air, when they open something like that, they're standing by, and they have this lacquer,
mm-hmm.
and they apply it to the skeleton very quickly, and that protects it. Forms a coating,
mm-hmm.
and it protects it. So it's still there. Somewhere that's there, but of course...
well, I finally found the picture. It's just not out there on the internet.
You found in the tomb. Yeah, it had been taken right after the lid came off.
Yeah.
The sarcophagus lid.
And what's interesting, this shows why. I think it shows why they didn't want to show us the skeleton in the tomb. Because he's about 8 feet tall.
He's definitely anomalous, and you have to bear in mind at the time that that this fellow was walking around that tall, that big, the average height of the European was under 5 foot for an adult male. It was something like 4'7", 4'8". So we're talking about something that would have been just absolutely astounding to people of the day. And this guy, looking at his skeleton, he doesn't show the deformities that are associated with the abnormal thyroid or other things, although his knees do look like they're quite a bit enlarged. But of course you can't tell if you had if you could see the way the bones are laid out more any better than you can, then you could see how proportional that he was. He doesn't look like an abnormality in that respect.
No, he looks like he's well-proportioned, just very big.
Yeah, he does.
And people who are looking at the picture on the screen now, what you're seeing is, if you didn't see that show where I dealt with this, let me explain it to you. You're looking inside the coffin, the sarcophagus of Lord Pakal, on the day, at the moment, they lifted the sarcophagus lid in 1952. This photograph, I doubt you'll be able to find it out there, but you might. But it is the real thing, and this photo is from National Geographic. Now, the measurements of this sarcophagus, the outside, if you go from the outside wall to the outside wall of the sarcophagus, it's 9 feet 10 inches. But there is about a 10-inch or maybe 1 foot thickness in the wall. In other words, the wall of the sarcophagus itself is approximately 10 inches to maybe 1 foot thick. All right, so that gives an inside length of the sarcophagus, inside of about 8 feet, and he fills this up.
And that's remarkable. The tallest that any prehistoric finds have been in North America to any extent are along the Missouri and Mississippi River. And these Indians were called the Mississippian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And their villages, when you find their burial sites intact, the men are between 6 foot 11 and 7 foot 2, and the women are up to 6 foot 6. And they had remarkable ceremonies in the way they conducted their burials. The bodies are all pointed differently in different directions, I think probably due to when they were born, when the position of the, if it was at night, it was position of the moon. If it was during the day, it was the position of the sun. The head would be, the eyes, nose, the face would be contoured towards the sun. And if it was the moon, it would be the feet. So I've seen them. One site near Paducah was run by a Southern Baptist church that owned the land. And they would pull these remains out and show them, and they would last for maybe a year or two in the air, and then they'd begin to disintegrate. And I asked them, I said, why don't you put shellac or lacquer over these? And they'd say, oh, well, there's so many of them, when that happens we just go get more.
Okay, we have to step away for break. We come back, we're going to open the phone lines for you. All right, we'll be back right after this. Back to the Kevin Smith Show, and as I promised at the top of the show, we are going to open the telephone lines just a little bit early, and they are open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. So you have ample opportunity this evening to get in and talk to James Horak. I know all across the country, all around the world, there are people with questions for him. And we want you to have the opportunity to do that, okay? So give us a call. If you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, we do understand that international long distance can be expensive. And so we have another option for you. You can call that number. It will work. Or you can use the flash message option on my website. Go to the website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above the picture you'll see a link that says flash message. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, James. How you doing?
All right, and you?
I'm doing okay. Got a little cough, but, you know. I'm going back to the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the kind of information I'd want. If I would want not only a regular photograph, I would want infrared and ultraviolet if they could do it, because apparently they're giving off some kind of energy. I'd want to know what kind of, if that energy can be measured in either one of those spectrums. And if they're humming, they're vibrating. What is the frequency of that vibration? That would be what I'd want to know.
I think that professor ought to hire you.
No. I'm in Wyoming. He's in Oregon.
That's not so far for a stepper.
Yeah, true.
But well, I guarantee you, Brad, you can do it. You can do it justice.
That stuff independently, that's the kind of information I'd be looking for.
Brent, do you think that if these were pier floats, that Dr. Hunschemacher would have said an alert has gone out and the boxes are being investigated? Do you think they would issue an alert for pier floats?
No, I don't think so. For someone in his position to put an alert out, he would have to notice something different about them that was out of the normal, out of paranormal, if you will.
Yeah, to be precise about it, we don't know that he put the alert out. He just said an alert has gone out. So I'm not claiming that he put the alert out, but he did make that statement that an alert has gone out and the boxes are being investigated.
Yeah, that's true.
So whoever put the alert out, why? If it's pier floats, I can see a pier float and know it's a pier float the instant I see it.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't know what a pier float looks like. I've only been to the ocean once or twice, but I'll agree with you.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for the call.
Yep.
All right. All righty then. 623-444-5889. And the telephone line is open. If you would like to speak with Mr. Horak, this is a great opportunity for you to do so. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi, James. My question is about your show previously on Lord Bacall.
Mm-hmm.
You showed a life mask or a death mask and a statue of Lord Bacall, and you mentioned that his nose went up to the middle of his forehead.
Yeah.
On when I watched that program, his nose actually went up past his midpoint in his forehead. I'd say almost up to a third from the top of his forehead on the mask and the statue.
It's almost to his hairline.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My question was, you mentioned something about him being a hybrid, and was his father the king, or his mother, did they have any similarities?
I don't know. I do know that there are similarities between he and his sons, because there are busts that were carved of his sons, and there are some. I mean, you look at them; they look like family. Now, on the thing about him being a hybrid, I asked the question: is it possible that he was hybrid? Now, I don't know about he and his father. James, do you know?
No, I don't. I think that would have shown that that would have been remembered in their art, because they were very lineage conscious,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't. The Egyptians were as well. And that feature is unique. If that was the way... And, of course, we'll never know, because, you know, they could take one of those teeth and get DNA. They're not going to do it, because we're talking about conventional archaeologists. And they're not going to talk about that ridge in there. You know, it's a lost trait that will never be examined any closer mentioned, but they find things like this. And when they find them, it's just totally ignored. It's shoved mm-hmm. back. And until you get someone that puts this sort of thing into a pattern or whatever, so that it can be called an anomaly and then shelved, it has no more distinction to the institutional scholarship than if it had no abnormality at all. It's just absolutely absurd.
Well, Kevin, mm-hmm. I'm gonna go on the premise that the Mayans were accurately describing what they seen.
Mm-hmm.
If this was true, I'm saying that he would have had to have been a hybrid, and it couldn't have been his mother. It was probably, I mean, the mother was probably inseminated or from an ET. And you mentioned that at 12 years old he became king, and I think the ETs gave the mother guidance to give to the young Lord Buddha.
Well, very possibly. I mean, of course, you know, and I know that would be speculation, but on the other hand, there's not a whole lot in history that would apply to his situation and make sense out of his situation. I mean, it's a pretty unique, not totally unique, but pretty unique situation for someone that young to become the king and begin to rule, you know, so young. It also, and James, correct me if I am wrong here, would have been very anomalous in Mayan times. It was anomalous that they allowed his mother to rule through him until he became of age. They didn't allow women to be rulers.
Well, this here again, this is something that goes along with more advanced empire.
Mm-hmm.
It existed with the Inca. It existed with the Aztec and the Golden Age of the Mayan culture, but not here. You're right, because in the lower down the scale of an organized empire that you get, the more fallback it is to primitive, not so intensive subsistence peoples that are less prone to build a vast sun temples and palaces and the ball courts.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have here is a very elegant palace. We have a very elegant ball court. Everything that has been found associated with this period of the Mayan culture is elegant. And I wish we had a good rubbing of what's on that sarcophagus lid.
Well, thank you, James, for helping Kevin out, and thank you, Kevin.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 623-444-5889, and we have a flash message here from Spardella Giulio in Belgium. He is, by the way, a member of the Kevin Smith Show. Oh, we got a break taking over. Spardella Giulio, we'll get to your flash message right after this break. We'll be back, folks. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted to have you here, and believe me, my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for the first hour. But we're delighted you're here now. We're talking this evening with Mr. James Horak, and we're doing something a little bit different in that it's kind of like Open Line Live. If you have a question or comment for James Horak, you give us a call, 623-444-5889. I know that all the times he's been with us before, you know, that people wanted to call and talk, and we just, you know, we only have 2 hours for the show, and we ran out of time, and you didn't get to call and talk to James Horak. Well, we started early with the telephones tonight, and it's kind of open line, and we will entertain your questions or comments for James Horak on any subject that he's addressed previously or tonight. Now, we have a flash message from Spradella Giulio. Caller, just hang on. We'll get to you in just a second. But Spradella Giulio in Belgium, as I was saying, he is a member at the Kevin Smith Show. And he says hello to James and Kevin. He wants to know if Lord Pakal was a good ruler or a cruel leader. What's your opinion?
No, he was a good ruler. One of the things that nobody's asked for is were they practicing human sacrifice? And indications are, if they were, it was minimal because there's no blood grooves coming down from the temple altar.
Uh-huh. Okay. To the telephone, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, you two. It's Jackie from Florida.
Hello, Jackie.
Hi. I was just calling. A friend sent me a video, and you haven't mentioned it, so I have to draw your attention to it.
Okay.
It's called Breaking Unidentified Object, Sun, March 11th, 2012. And it looks like a sphere is in the corona with a twirling black vortex either going to or coming out from the sun at about the 7 o'clock position. Have either one of you seen that?
No. Have you,
yes,
James?
Yes, I have.
You have. I had not even heard of it.
I've already been asked about it, too.
Well, Jackie, how about let's ask James to talk about that?
James, would you please talk about that just a little bit?
Thanks, Jackie.
Yes, it's a modified EMV that is absorbing a great deal of energy from the sun to help quiet it down.
Good. It's helping with this mass ejection that we've been experiencing?
Yes. A few days ago, there were a vast number, well over 100 EMVs that could be seen just on this side of the sun. They had come through the anvil and for this purpose. Now, it doesn't take a number of them, but that gives them the contingency to form together and to rapidly quieten the sun activity down.
It's an amazing picture because in one where it magnifies it, you can just literally see the strands like twirling like a little vortex.
Oh, yeah. They can change their shape. They can change their size. But they conform to whatever the tasks that they have to do, whatever best meets accomplishing that task. They have incredible viability and can modify very quickly because, after all, they're exploiting a great deal of energy. So and they're replacing it as fast as they take it. And when the sun has died down to where it's more stable, they'll return that energy.
Okay. And the black boxes, gee whiz, I don't know. If they washed up in Sri Lanka right before the earthquake, then maybe Marshall Masters is watching them thinking the Northwest might be in for a little shakeup.
Well, it's interesting that they're just about in time for Valentine's Day.
Spring, anyway. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks a lot, you guys, and thank you, James. I'm glad you came and helped out our boy tonight.
Anytime.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night, Jackie.
Valentine's Day, well, we already had that, but Easter's coming.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I think you know, it would have been a real frolic to see one of them shaped with the shape of a heart, but you know, whoever's responsible, they don't seem to have a sense of humor I have.
All right, to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, this is Leah from Tennessee.
Hello, Leah.
Hello, Leah.
Hey, James.
How are you?
All right. I wanted to talk about those bakus.
Mm-hmm.
Although the call is pretty interesting, too. Now, as far as the boxes, I would have to say the same thing. It's the lack of any kind of extra information outside of the initial announcement of them. Then there's nothing. That's what actually calls my attention to them. And I was wondering if what you guys ever think that maybe it kind of remind me of the monolith.
Which monolith?
You know, like that, like in the movie that they, the one they found on the moon, and the, you know.
Well, maybe. They seem a little bit...
And even at the end of the 2010 movie, they had a lot of small ones.
Yes, they did.
And these... I didn't see that movie. These small ones, were they tall, or were they...
They were smaller. They actually... it was when Jupiter was forming a sun in New Worlds.
And in the movie, what was their function?
They never really said.
Well, there was a monolith that warned astronaut off of the moons of Jupiter. The warning was anywhere else but here.
Right. Yeah, that was the last scene. That's what I first thought of when they showed it, and the fact that they were getting sound from it.
Leah, you've heard all the over the years, you've heard all the theories and stories and rumors that California someday will have the big earthquake and sink into the ocean, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered how people know that California is going to sink? Maybe when they have the big earthquake, the rest of the United States sinks.
And leaving only California.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I mean, how do they know that? Yeah,
well,
you know.
That's what Edgar Cayce prophesied, along with many others.
Yeah. I know that they will have a big earthquake sooner or later. I know that you and me and everybody else over here in the middle of the country, we're going to get the big shake out of the New Madrid fault line sooner or later. It's going to happen. But I just don't know how people can predict what's going to sink and what's going to stand.
I don't think they can.
Yeah, I would say it's more just a guess, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I've got a surfboard.
That wouldn't be enough for me.
Yeah, I got a surfboard because when the one in when the New Madrid fault line goes, they say the Great Lakes are going to empty down the fault line. And for those of you who don't know, the Mississippi River is that fault line.
Yep.
And
yeah,
so.
And here in Tennessee, I'm sitting here like an island. I got the mountains for barriers for the ocean. I mean, even if we had a big tidal wave, it shouldn't go too bad over the big mountains, of it. And with the Mississippi, we should just barely miss the Mississippi flooding and be a little bit high enough. We might be okay.
I may have to come your direction when it happens.
Well, they said that's the biggest problem with this area, is so many people be running this way because there'll be all that's left.
You see an old man coming in on a surfboard, you know it's me.
I'll be watching for
you. All right. Leah, thanks for the call.
You have a good night.
All right. What a sight. See my old self coming in there on a surfboard. Have you got a surfboard, James?
Never surfed. I've sailed. What is it called? Wind sailing?
Mm-hmm.
Sailing? where I wasn't very good at it. I didn't do it very long or whatever, but I had a friend that was very good at it, and so he talked me into it, and I got out there just far enough so that when I fell, that the mast didn't stick in the mud.
All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, James. How we doing tonight?
All right.
I have to apologize. I just got home from one of my other meetings just about 10 minutes ago. So
I'm sorry.
I pretty well got an idea about the topic. But those boxes, I don't know how much truth, because I can't get out there to look at them, but they claim that they can't hardly move them. Is there any truth to that?
Well, we don't know. That's part of what we talked about, Mike, is, we're hearing these reports that you can't move them. They're giving off a humming sound, or even in one case, the sound of a sustained siren. That's it. I mean, we hear the reports, but there's been, since that initial two or three reports that came out, there's been no other information. However, South Lincoln County News reported that those boxes are actually pier floats made out of wood and fiberglass. Now, what shoots that in the foot is, in an earlier report, Dr. Hans Schumacher of OSU Hatfield Marine Research Center was giving a statement, and he said they didn't know what the boxes were. He wasn't going to speculate or comment on speculations that had been made, but an alert has gone out, and the boxes are being investigated. Okay, now, I figure that Dr. Hans Schumacher of the Hatfield Marine Research Center probably knows what a pier float looks like.
Right.
So why would anybody put out an alert and put them under investigation if you can walk up to them, you look at it, and you say, that's a pier float?
Well, I'll turn that around and say, why would anybody say that Roswell crashed with just a weather balloon?
Well,
you know,
yeah, that's a good point.
There are stories, too, about the military allegedly having actually taken some of these boxes. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not.
Well, how could the military, if you can't pick them up, you can't put chains around them and drag them, you can't put them in pick them up with a front end loader, how could the military pick them up?
Maybe they're using some kind of anti-gravity force to nullify their weight.
If they could do that, I would suspect they put them there.
Plus, yes. Is there any, do you think in either one of you's opinion that there's any connection between these boxes and what's going on over in the Baltic, those underwater objects down the bottom?
I don't know. I do know that Captain Robert McDonald, the ship's captain of the Viking ship, remember him?
Yeah.
Right.
He was visiting in Ireland, and when he came back from Ireland, got back home in the Netherlands, he was sick. He had pneumonia and had to go to the hospital, and while he was there, someone sank his ship in the port.
Really?
And that is
I hadn't
after,
heard that.
Yeah, and that's after he received some threats that he'd better stop what he was doing. I talked to him today.
How's he doing?
Well, you know, he's still sick. He was very, very sick. and he's
with Kevin.
Much better. Yeah, Kevin was pretty sick, but Kevin didn't have pneumonia.
And, get his ship sunk.
Oh, me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought Kevin did have pneumonia.
Well, he might have had, but anyway, I know it was a cold from hell, and I hardly ever get sick. I don't. You'll think this isn't true, but mosquitoes don't even bite me.
Well, you know,
they don't like the taste of reptilian blood, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're saying. I know. All right, let me get off here so somebody else can call in here.
All right, Mike. Thanks for the call.
Nice to talk to you again. Bye bye.
Bye. Yeah, it's, yeah, they sank a ship. And,
that's a shame.
It was in port. And somebody blew a hole in the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, James. This is Victoria from Washington.
Hi, Victoria.
Both of you.
Hello,
tonight.
Victoria.
I have two questions. One should be a quick one for either one of you, probably Kevin, because you're keeping up with this. But do you have any word that these boxes are still where they landed, or have they disappeared? Are they still there?
No word.
Question.
No word. And that's what James and I were both commenting on, is how everything went silent.
Well, you'd think if they were still there, that people would be out there, you know, taking pictures, and there'd be news stories and everything. Well, okay, so if you don't know, then the second question is, which I thought was really curious, and this one's for James, is that on this last massive solar ejector that we had, I was really surprised that it got as much news coverage as it did. It was on all of the national networks, and that we're going to probably get hit, and then, you know, the big scare warning came out, and I was wondering, you know, gee, they ought to be pretty good with, you know, what's going to happen. And I had to step away for a minute, so I hope you didn't answer this question before. But what do you think all of the national media blitz about this particular CME, which was supposed to be like a Category 4 or 5 or something, and it turned out just to be a 1, and then nothing happened, and it was all scare, scare, scare. I just want to know what your opinion is. Thank you, James.
That's a very good point, Victoria. They are trying to make the sun the villain, to cover the results of the chemtrails, Fukushima, just the way that they have screwed with the environment and the repercussions to nature. And if they blame it on the sun, you know, and there are people that are playing along with it, and I think that it is absurd, because you have to bear in mind that your life giver is the sun. You wouldn't last 2 weeks without the sun. So if they can vilify the sun, and vilify our Constitution, and vilify religion, vilify God, everything that we've ever had value for, they leave us with nothing, then you don't have any backbone. And you're a good meal for the New World Order.
Well, yeah, and I just thought it was because they have never talked about CMEs before, and I don't care how big they were and how nasty and how you know, threatening they were in the past, all of a sudden it's the old scare tactic, and it turns out to be nothing, and they say, oh, well, we missed the bullet, and it's just ludicrous that they're trying to scare everyone. And so I'm thinking, well, what is the bait and switch? You know, they're doing the, you know, the precedigitalis, you know, where they're you know, making you look this way, and they're doing something else. So I'm wondering what the heck they're doing. if you know.
Well, they may resent losing some of their military satellite array.
They did?
You know, they might, but you ought to be thankful they are. It's nice, though, that it can knock those things out, but not harm any people on Earth. I think that's a skill, don't you?
Didn't hear that.
Yeah, I had not heard either, James. Did it knock out some of the military satellite array?
They've been falling out of the sky like rain.
Wow, that's the first I've heard of that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got any more info on that, James?
We don't want them up there. They're absolutely doing no good for the people, for 99% of the people on this planet. There is hardly a science project that's being funded through the military that is doing any good for anybody, even our troops in Afghanistan.
Okay, then.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it, and good talking to both of you tonight. And take care of both of you, okay?
All right. Thanks for the call, Victoria.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.
Nice lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Victoria is one of the people who attended our Alternative Universe Eye Conference on the 3rd of March, and I bet she's going to be at the next one, too. Hope you will. Be sure you get your tickets.
All right.
Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Leslie from Oregon.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi. Hi, how are you two doing?
Doing good.
I'm just calling about those humming boxes that have been found on the coast of Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And first, let me just say I have no idea what's going on about it. But what I can say is my family and I actually, we just got back. We go over to the beach at least once a month, and we just got back there. We were there this weekend, and I have, you know, we go there so much. I have friends that live, you know, different places on the coast. And I haven't, other than that one report and hearing about it on the Kevin Smith Show, I haven't heard anything about it. So I did some research, and this is just a gut feeling, but I think that maybe something else is going on. I mean, I think something was found, but maybe not as many as they're saying. I don't know. I just...
Okay, Leslie, we have a break that's about to take over. Can you hang on through the break?
Sure.
Okay. You hang on through the break. See here, we've got somebody from Oregon, ladies and gentlemen. And when we come back from the break, Leslie from Oregon just got back from the beach. And what she said so far is she hadn't heard anything else about it other than that one report and what she's heard on the Kevin Smith Show. But she's got a theory. All right, we'll be back right after this break, so don't go away.
Chesapeake, Virginia, and you are smart because you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show, all you smart people, and you are smart. On the telephone with us is Leslie from Oregon. Leslie, we had to interrupt you because of the break. So, if you will, tell us again what you said before the break.
Yeah, just saying that, you know, I live here in Oregon, and my family and I, we go to the beach at least once a month, and we just got back. We spent the weekend over there, and I have a bunch of friends that live, you know, different cities along the coast. Mm-hmm. And I, other than the article and, you know, your show, the Kevin Smith Show, I haven't heard anything about the humming boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Or, or metal boxes, and again, this is I don't know what they are, so this is just, you know, my idea, but something about it just doesn't seem right, because I tried to do some more research, and you know, no one's heard anything about it, and just my thought is, you know, maybe in fact one did show up, but then you hear they're saying that like dozens or, you know, quite a few are appearing up and down the beach. But it, you know, for, and I've even gone to the areas where they were supposedly found, and I didn't see anything. So I think that there's just something not right about it. So I don't know. That's just...
Well, I mean, you know, Leslie, there's the possibility that the whole story's a lie.
Yeah, it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I do know a lot of odd things. You know, strange things definitely do occur over here in the Coast Range, you know, towards the beach. I don't know if that's even related, but, so I just wanted to let you know that, you know, personally, I mean, that doesn't mean to say that they haven't washed up just because I haven't or my friends haven't heard about it, but just, yeah, this kind of seems odd.
It does seem odd. You would think if they live, you've actually gone to the area where the box is supposed to have been found. You didn't see anything, and nobody knew anything about it. So, you know, there's a good possibility the story's a lie.
What she was going to say, Kevin, about it possibly being a cover for something else might be true.
It could be a cover for something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Leslie, what do you think it might be a cover for?
This is, again, this is just my idea, is I think that this is going to sound silly, but I think that there's maybe, I don't know, a base or something in this area, especially in the Coast Range, that they don't want to know, and so maybe it has something to do with that. Maybe like, hey, look what's going on the beach, but really maybe something else is going on they don't want you to see. I don't know. That's just a guess, so I don't know.
I think that's a pretty good surmise.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's... Yeah, just wanted to call in and tell you that.
Leslie, did you know that if you leave the northern... up in the northern beach area of Oregon, and you head out into the Pacific and just go straight ahead, it's a pretty good distance out there, but on the floor of the Pacific in that area, there are at least two and maybe three pyramids.
Yeah, I did know that. Mm-hmm. Yep. I gotta tell you, if you guys ever get a chance, come up to the Northwest and, you know, just come visit me. There's all kinds of fun stuff.
Too spooky for me. Spooky stuff just scares me, you know, Leslie. I don't...
Oh, no, it's kind of exciting. It won't hurt you up here. Trust me, I live up here. And, I'm safe as hell. You'll be okay, too. I promise. I got your back.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Okay.
Yeah, all 5'2" of me.
5'2", yeah. Well, if you're 5'2", you're just a little bit taller than my wife.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
She's a little bitty girl.
Tall now.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Leslie.
Thanks. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Yeah, my wife is a little tiny thing. Got her picture on the wall right up here, and while I do the show, she and my son stare down at me, James. You've seen the pictures.
I have. She's beautiful. Mm-hmm. She is beautiful.
Thank you.
A nice looking boy too.
He is. He's a motor scooter, I can tell you that.
I bet.
All right, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And if you have a question or you have a comment for James Horak, tonight is a great time because we've opened up the phones early. And we're not as rushed, and we're doing this to give you the opportunity to speak with him. So anything he's talked about previously on the show, or you've read something he wrote, you've got a question, you got a comment, Mr. Horak is here to answer your questions, okay? 623-444-5889. James, you know, we started out by saying we don't know whether these black boxes that are showing, well, I don't know if they're black, but these boxes that are showing up, we don't know if they're hoaxes or if it's a real deal or whatever. And what Leslie had to say kind of adds some fuel to the fire on the side of maybe the whole thing's a hoax. It might be. I don't know.
Well, she told us we got more information from her than we have found from any other single source, really.
That's true. That's true. And that's one of the great things, honestly, about this audience is they are smart people. And, you know, that. Mushrooms don't last in this audience. They get in here and they get converted or they wither, you know, and so, you know, mushrooms are not in the audience. These are smart people. We have a smart people on the line now. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling from?
My name's Lasha, and I'm calling from Vancouver, B.C., and that's a lot of pressure having to be smart now.
You have a hard act to follow.
I have a comment and a question.
All right.
First of all, the black boxes. I'm kind of going a different direction with this. I'm kind of thinking that maybe it's radioactive debris from Japan that they don't want us to know about.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
It might be.
Might be.
That's just my instinct on it, you know, that they certainly want to cover up the whole how much damage there's been, you know, and if you got radioactive stuff washing up on a beach, people are going to panic.
Yeah. I have to admit, Lasha, that is something I had not considered. Now, you see, you lived up to what I said. You're a smart people.
Hey, I'm quick like a bunny.
Well, she's paranoid like me, Kevin.
Quick like a bunny and paranoid like a horak.
Right.
Yeah.
Two peas in the same pot.
There you go.
Mr. James, I have a question for you.
Sure.
I don't know. My instinct is that has anybody noticed that the planets and the stars seem to be kind of out of alignment?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And sometimes they're a lot out of alignment, and that's why I say if you want to keep up with this sort of thing, get one of these software programs that'll give you a fix on the sky, where you are at the time, and show you what the sky should look like at night. So when you step out, you have a basis of comparison, and you can determine that it's out of whack and pretty much by how far.
Do you know, here's the deal. I'm an astrologer, and I do study the sky. And I've noticed that every once in a while, the moon isn't where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days later, it's back to normal.
That's right.
And I don't know what the hell's going on.
Very good,
oh,
yeah.
Pardon my language.
Well, you know what, Lasha? I visited with James, what was it, about a year ago, James?
Yes.
And we noticed that the moon was way off course, and then, you know, it got back on course. What was it? A couple of days, James, and it was back where it was supposed to be.
It's supposed to migrate, just like the sun, and then it's also supposed to have. If you notice as it crosses the sky each night, that it's a little bit behind where it was the night before. And that's supposed, that arc of difference is supposed to be the same. And when it's not, you know something's wrong. Well, I would say that on the average, 3 or 4 times a month, that arc is not where it should, is not what it should be.
I completely agree. And did you know that in January, the sun rose 2 days earlier than it should have in Greenland?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
what are you going to do with your ephemerises when they no longer are any good?
Exactly. You know, I've noticed, too, that two of the things I've noticed is that Jupiter at night seems to be far brighter than I've ever seen it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the sun
That's true.
Is lower and brilliant.
And it almost, sometimes you could almost swear it was sparkling like a star does, but it's not.
Yes.
Because that's how you tell the difference between a planet and a star. The stars sparkle.
Here's a strange question for you, James.
Sure.
Do you think the sun is becoming conscious?
The sun is conscious.
There you go. We are two peas in the same pod, James.
Well, thank you. That's a compliment.
Okay, Lasha, I want to thank you for calling. Have you ever called us before, or is this your first time?
I did once before, about jeepers, a week ago, I think.
Okay. All right, yeah, you know, I remember. I'm an old guy, so I forget stuff, but I do remember when you called. Yeah. Well, thanks for the call.
Okay, this is a... No problem.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, well, there you go. James, you're not unique anymore. There's somebody else out there like you.
I know. And she's paranoid, and she's aware of certain things that most people are not, and so.
Well, you know, it gets into a philosophical kind of thing about, is the sun conscious? My view of it would be philosophically a little different, and that is not that I am conscious or that you are conscious or that the sun is conscious, but consciousness is, and we are manifestations of that consciousness. And all matter is, because it is organized. And so consciousness is what creates matter. That's what I would say.
Well, yeah, you have to bear in mind one thing, you know, until you can answer the question of where do all the souls go,
mm-hmm.
you can't exclude the possibility.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that instead of saying I have consciousness, I am consciousness. I am an expression or a manifestation of the consciousness that permeates and creates the universe. That's the way I view it. I could be wrong.
Well, I believe in a collective consciousness, and I think that it exceeds any kind of physical realm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is above the physical. And yet,
if you can't explain to someone, and they can't explain to you what infinity is,
mm-hmm.
or where does this stop, or what are the confines of infinity, or anything, then how can they set parameters on other things that have a bearing on the unknown?
Well, that will have to remain unknown until we come back from this break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest, actually sort of my co-host here this evening, James Horak. We have a caller on hold. Let me just say, that song you just heard, that same group, Cal and Shelley, have an absolutely stunning presentation or rendition of Amazing Grace. And that's kind of, you know, I downloaded it because I was surprised. That's such a kind of different song, you know, a different kind of song from Is There Something Going On Between Us? So get over to musicalley.com, look them up, and take a listen to them. Maybe one night I'll play that. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello, Rusty.
Hi, James. Well, you just said something just before we went to break that really, really caught my ear. You said something, I can't remember your whole comment, but something about where do all the souls go?
Okay.
He said, until we can answer the question, where do all the souls go? And how does a person answer that question?
Well, you have to attribute possibility to these questions you can't answer. And they're people that, when they can't answer them, their ego won't let them, since they can't answer them. And, you know, they've told themselves there is no God. They've told themselves there's nothing finer in the university, in the universe, than themselves. We all know these people. I mean, just, they haunt forums. They're out there in your face anytime that you say anything about the spiritual, anytime that you say anything about the innate goodness of people. They don't believe in any of this, and they're out there to decry it the moment that it's said. And these are questions that they can't answer, and that's why they like this, because it causes reexamination, and we all know there are people not capable of that. So, scientists are in a bag, and that's the self-imposed bag they're in. But I know where a vast majority of spirits go.
And where is that?
EMVs.
I knew you were going to say that, because you said that before.
A few times.
Yeah. But I agree. And, you know, James, you've heard me say this. I'm not a religious person, but that doesn't mean I'm not spiritual.
I know you are. I know you are.
And I'm not religious, and I'm not impressed with religion. But, Rusty, you've heard me say it too. I'm not afraid to say, when I get to the end of the data and I still have questions, I'm not afraid to say, I don't know.
Well, Kevin, you mentioned Amazing Grace, which I grew up listening to that song because my grandmother was a fundamentalist.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one song that always stuck in my mind, because of all religious songs, it's the most beautiful and the least religious.
Yeah, it really is. It is not religious.
No.
Yeah. Rusty, did you have another question or comment?
Yeah. So, mention about the sun being alive. Can you
conscious.
Elaborate a little bit more on that?
We know damn sure it's alive. We feel it anytime it's out. We feel it, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
If it provokes a response, it's alive. And it certainly does. It's wonderful. It's the mother of life.
So
but you want to know about consciousness.
Yeah.
Directed energy has consciousness. And there is a play between what's in the EMVs and the sun, and there are even people in the sun. And I've seen them. So all of this is it breeds a community of consciousness. And I think that anything that can direct energy, anything that can bring life, reciprocates with life consciousness.
So you're not under the thought, that the sun's going to burn out in so many years?
Well, no. That's, if you sit down and you try to figure out how long any star will last, you can't do it. And there's no formula for doing it, because astrophysicists that try to come to terms with this make leaps sometimes and understand an exchange is going on. And that exchange is with EMVs. If there is something to protect in any system where you have a fusion star with planets and you have complex life, it's seeded. The situation is created and designed. So what comes about when this sort of relationship occurs is a basic exchange, and helium is a big part of that. And that's one reason why helium is the most plentiful so-called element, let's say form of matter, not element, in the universe. It's also the least talked about, which is curious.
Alrighty, that's all I had. Thanks, James.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. All right.
Rusty always has good questions.
He does. He does. Expound a bit on the, when you say the sun is conscious, what are you talking about?
Well, of course, anytime you say something like that, people want to know what your definition of consciousness is. And anytime that you have energy, and it is directed to accomplish something in particular.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Whether it's to direct the path of incoming asteroids or comets that you know under intelligent guidance when they change course. Anytime that you see this sort of thing, there's a consciousness involved. And until that you can attribute the source of that consciousness to someone in particular, like with the sun, and the sun is coming, so many things are going on in the sun simultaneously, the order of consciousness is so great, to try to define it as limiting, and you can't remove the possibility by trying to attach to it a false attribution.
Mm-hmm.
So, is the entity that we call the sun conscious? Well, in a poetic sense, it is, because it has so many other attributes, life-giving attributes, that I would take the same step that the ancients took, and they attributed a consciousness to it. So, you know, since they are aware of so many things we've forgotten, I attribute a consciousness out of regard for them. The same way that I call EMVs EMVs out of deference to Dr. Bergman.
All right. Well, James, as always, this has been mind-opening and very interesting, and I thoroughly appreciate you coming in and helping me out this evening. And I can tell you, folks, this afternoon, I didn't think I was going to be able to get through this show because I had taken some medicine. I had taken one decongestant tablet, and I don't normally take those. I don't normally take medicine, and man, I was fuzzy-brained at the time. And so I asked James to come help us out, and he very graciously did. So I appreciate that. And I thank all of you who called in. I thank you who sent flash messages. And you made this happen. Don't forget, get over and click where it says Alternative Universe on my website and get your ticket. Now's the time. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.